Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace.
I'm Manny.
And this is a Secret War Saturday episode. And finally, we're on to the main event. We're going to be talking about Marvel Superhero Secret Wars number one in a 12-issue limited series. Cover date,
May
1984. It's all been leading up to this, kids. So let me give a quick rundown of the creative team. Written by Jim Shooter. Pencils by Mike Zeck. Inks by John Beatty. And colors by Christy Scheel. So, first of all, before we even get into the episode or the issue itself, let's talk about that cover, right? That is an iconic cover that Marvel has used over and over and over and over again. And Mike Zeck, I have a copy of issue one signed by cover artist Mike Zeck. And I remember when I met him and had him sign it, he even commented on the fact that he has signed many Secret Wars issue number one over the years. The other thing that's interesting about the cover is, so it has not everybody that's in the story, like not all the heroes make the cover. And there's a previous version of the cover that has Kitty Pryde, like right there next to Rogue, just underneath Nightcrawler. And then she obviously, like, they removed her because she's not in the story. And I never did quite get the lowdown on what the reason for that was, like why Chris Claremont didn't want her in the story or if it was someone else. But also, the Thing and Human Torch are on this cover, and there have been times in the past where Marvel hasn't wanted to promote them for whatever reason, probably a lot to do with the fact that they don't own the movie rights to them, and they've basically kind of edited them out or done other versions where there's different people. And likewise with the X-Men, I've seen versions where the X-Men aren't there and they're replaced with other heroes, and it always looks kind of wonky to me. But this cover with Captain America in the forefront and Wolverine and Spidey and Hulk and Iron Man, I mean, this is the cover I remember from my youth. This is the cover that always stands out to me and that I always remember and think about when I think of Secret Wars. I mean, it's just used in so many different places. So it's definitely a classic cover. So I had to mention that. All right, so let's get into the issue itself. Now, we know that leading up to issue one, we saw a lot of our heroes enter that construct in Central Park and then just disappear. And so what happens is they all kind of materialize in a construct similar to the one that they saw in Central Park, except this time it has kind of like a bubble around it that basically holds atmosphere for them. And they're in space. And you hadn't read it before, Manny. So the way Shooter does it, so they all kind of say, hey, you know, we were just exploring blah, blah, blah. And now we're in this construct in space. And how did we get here and what's going on? And everything's kind of crazy. But then they do kind of a lineup for the people that, you know, maybe they weren't familiar with all the characters at the time back in 1984. They certainly weren't as, you know, ubiquitous as they are now. So did you find that kind of wonky, Manny, where they did kind of the lineup like, I'm Wasp and this is like She-Hulk and Captain Marvel, and they basically went down the line like roll call?
Not really. I just kind of took it for something out of its time. I just didn't find it that weird. I thought of it as a product of its time, pretty much. Like, because I understand too that it was in a lot of different books that a lot of these characters got sucked into. And I'm not sure how many kids got every one of these comic books. So, you know, I would understand why they would feel the need to do a roll call, like, hey, who's here and who's not. So, not a problem with it at all.
All right. Yeah. It's, It's pretty interesting. I actually, you know, as much of a comic reader as I was back in 1984, I was a youngin' back then. I had never actually read anything or any X-Men comic. This was the first comic that I read that had the X-Men in it. I know that even surprises me to say that. I can't believe, you know, I'd been reading comics for about 4 years at this time, 3-4 years. And I don't know why I never picked up an X-Men comic. I guess the covers never grabbed me. And so, yeah, this was really the first time that I was introduced to a lot of the X-Men, Professor X and Wolverine and like all those guys. So likewise, with the heroes, there's also a villain little bubble ring thing that shows up. And in contrast to the heroes, they don't introduce themselves. Dr. Doom gives kind of a rundown. And again, there were some of these villains I'd never heard of. I think I'd heard of just about everybody except for Molecule Man, maybe. And I can't remember if I was familiar with Wrecker and his wrecking crew. But it's interesting that in the story, Galactus is there as well. I know this is the first story that I read with Galactus. Obviously, I had heard of him, but I hadn't read a story. He's there with the villains as well. But along with the heroes is Magneto. And I wasn't, again, I hadn't read any X-Men books at the time, so I wasn't really familiar with Magneto. So I didn't necessarily understand the big deal, like why all the rest of the, because the heroes comment like, okay, because they're able to sense that there's another ship, like Professor Xavier is able to sense there's another ship out there, another little bubble, and it's filled with these villains. And then the Thing is actually the one that says, okay, so we got a who's who of bad guys over there. So what's this slimeball Magneto doing on, you know, the quote unquote hero ship? And so, yeah, I wasn't familiar with Magneto at all. So seeing him on the hero side, I was like, okay, I don't know why that's a big deal. Did you find that kind of strange, Manny? I mean, being that you know Magneto's a bad guy from the movies and all that stuff?
Yes and no. I kind of like the explanation that he kind of gives also, like saying, oh, bad guy? I'm just an advocate for mutants. And, you know, he doesn't consider himself a bad guy. He considers himself someone who's just trying to do what's best for mutants. And I thought to myself, well, you know what? Maybe that's something that got taken into consideration, and that's why he was put with the villains. Because if I think about Magneto and what he does it all for mutants. He's not necessarily looking for to world domination or whatever. He just wants what's best for mutants. So that actually, I thought that was kind of nifty too, because it just adds a little extra rift in the heroes, which they at first in this issue they don't seem to have. So they needed to add a little bit more drama to their lineup, because they seem all very, very kind of kumbaya to be together, while on the other side, Galactus is doing his own thing, and Ultron's just shooting everything, and Dr. Doom is being a diva. His inclusion to the heroes, I thought, just kind of added a little bit of extra drama that the team needed.
Did you feel like these first few pages with kind of the exposition and introducing all the characters and Magneto gives his little speech, did you feel like they were wordy at all?
Not necessarily, because they're just a lot of names more than anything. So it was just kind of getting through it, almost kind of as an afterthought to read it, because you're like, all right, this person. But being that it is the first issue of Secret Wars, also I was a lot more careful in reading everything, because I didn't want to miss anything.
All right, fair enough. So once Magneto gives his little speech, yeah, everything I do is for the betterment of my race, and I don't know what power transported me here, but I was placed among you for a reason. And then before they can even like discuss further, all of a sudden all the stars that are there in the galaxy in the area they are all just wiped away like dust before some unseen giant hand, says Thor. And then we see Battle World, the first Battle World being constructed, basically pieces of a bunch of other worlds from all across the galaxy, little chunks of it are basically mashed together. And we find out later there's actually a suburb of Denver that's one of the pieces from Earth that gets brought in to create this planet close to the one star that's left in the galaxy. And Doom is just beside himself. He's salivating because the fact that somebody would have so much power, and you know, if there's anything Doom craves, it's power. So while he's doing that, Ultron says, I don't really care what's going on outside. I am Ultron. You're all living things, so I must destroy you. And he starts firing at all the other villains. And Doom's like, oh man, I don't know if my personal force shield can stand up indefinitely against Ultron. So he tries to get the Molecule Man, who's actually the most powerful of all the characters in the book, with perhaps the exception of the Beyonder, who we're about to talk about in a second. Doom tries to get Molecule Man to stop Ultron, and Molecule Man says, no, I don't want to hurt anybody. I'm a wimpy guy who has all these powers, and I'm trying to be good because my therapist says so. And so Doom at least convinces him to kind of redirect Ultron to bang into Galactus, which actually makes Galactus notice Ultron, because up to this point, Galactus is just standing there stone, you know, still like a statue. He doesn't deign to notice any lesser beings, but being that Ultron banged into him, he levitates him up, and Ultron starts to get all uppity, and Galactus basically just snaps his fingers and snuffs Ultron out like a candle, just sucks the energy right out from the middle of his body, and Galactus, you know, falls down with a clang. And then a rift opens up in space, and we hear a voice saying, I am from beyond, slay your enemies, everything you desire shall be yours. And we find out that this is the being of all this power that has brought these two factions to this area to do battle, basically. And he doesn't call himself Beyonder, he just says, I am from beyond. And it's actually Galactus that christens him. He says, you, Beyonder, I sense that you have all this power and you can end my unending hunger that causes me to go and consume, you know, all the energy from living worlds. Let it be done. And he flies forth. He breaks through the little bubble heading toward the Beyonder and the Rift. And Doom, ever hungry for power, as I mentioned earlier, follows him. And he's thinking to himself that, yeah, if Galactus and this Beyonder get in a fight, you know, whoever wins will be in a weakened state, and maybe I can sneak in there and get some power for myself because I'm Doom and I've got to have all the power. But as they get close, they're basically swatted away from the rift, and the rift closes. And Professor Xavier remarks that to the Beyonder, even Galactus is less than a fly. So pretty interesting. The other thing I'll mention about this sequence is the coloring. So everybody's bathed in kind of this bluish white light from this rift that the Beyonder opens up. And it's really an incredible job to kind of color shift. Like Galactus is normally like pink and purple, but here he looks blue and white just based on the different colors that they're being bathed in from this light. So that's really cool visual. So then the ships basically are hurtled toward Battle World, and the heroes and villains respectively are transported down to the planet. And again, the issue of Magneto being among the heroes comes up as Reed Richards kind of stretches up and says, not a villain in sight. And the Avengers are like, what are you talking about? There's one right here. Magneto. And again, like Manny was talking about, we see some conflict with the X-Men saying, hey, it's not the time or place. And Hawkeye, being ever the hothead, says, oh, you meet and stick together, huh? And so Magneto is not having it. He's like, whatever, don't care. None of you are my equal. And he kind of uses his power to throw back some of the heroes that are threatening him. And he basically flies away on magnetic waves. So then the heroes fall into a discussion of talking about who's going to lead them. They say, Richards is perhaps the smartest of us. Perhaps he should be in charge. But if you remember when we did the episode about the Fantastic Four prologue, how pregnant Sue Richards was, and Reed Richards basically says, my mind is 1,000 miles away. I'm not the right person. Maybe Dr. Banner. Because at this time, the Hulk has the intellect of Bruce Banner. But before he can even respond, the Human Torch says, I don't know that I can follow the orders of the Hulk. You know, he's a mindless brute for so long. And before the Hulk doesn't take exception to that. He says, I'm not interested in giving any orders. Let Captain America do it. He likes doing it anyway. And Wasp chimes in that even though she's the leader of the Avengers currently, she'll defer to Captain America because he's basically probably the best choice because he has the most strategic mind. But Cap's, being ever so humble, doesn't just immediately accept. He's got to say, what about you, Professor X? You can read minds. That might come in handy. And Wolverine says, wait a minute, he's the least of us. I won't follow him. But Thor pretty much settles it when he says, I am the Prince of Gods and I will follow this man through the gates of Hades. So settled it is. What's interesting, this was written in 1984. At that time, Wolverine was still, his backstory and origin still very much a mystery. He almost acts like he won't follow Captain America, doesn't really know him, but it's been retconned in, many, many times over various stories that they've known each other since like before, way before Steve Rogers was ever frozen in the ice and went in suspended animation. They knew each other in World War II. So it's kind of interesting. I mean, obviously, that wasn't the case when this was written by Shooter, and there's no way he could have known that, they would create these stories that were actually in the past, but it's just something that I noticed. Were you surprised, Manny, that they chose Captain America as the leader, or did you kind of see that coming?
Yeah, I could see that a mile away. He's no doubt going to be the leader. Just really good job by Shooter into getting everybody's little personalities in while they're making that decision. I thought that was great. I really, really liked that because there's a lot of characters on those pages, and just the way that he's able to capture, kind of the Hulk being a little salty, Wolverine's jumping in like, hey no, and then being really brash about it, and then Xavier kind of using his words and knowledge to kind of push the responsibility to Captain America, and then also Thor with his kind of royal voice or whatever. So I mean, just overall, just a really good job at knowing the characters and the way they would have responded to this situation.
Yeah, it's a good point because as you said, not every Marvel Comics reader is reading every Marvel comic. So just like, I didn't really know much about Professor X. I mean, I knew of him. I knew of the X-Men, but I didn't really, understand their personalities and everything. So, the interplay with Magneto and the X-Men kind of come into his defense. And then this talk of who's going to be the leader or whatever, it does kind of give you just a real quick window into kind of the attitude or the place of each of the heroes. So yeah, that's a really good point. So the story continues on the next page. We see that Doom and Galactus have survived their fly swat from the Beyonder. Galactus is still unconscious. Doom walks away from him and he says he must have the power, such power beyond all in existence in our universe. And he comes across a stronghold and he says, no doubt that's where the others will be. How convenient that the Beyonder slapped him down right next to where all the villains showed up. And Doom goes on to say he must talk to them and convince them they must not play the game. They must not fight. So that's kind of interesting, right? So the Beyonder is actually offering them their heart's desire. And Doom, and you would think he'd be like, yeah, let's figure out how to defeat these heroes and get what we want, which, you know, I want all this power. And he's actually thinking beyond that. He's like, I need to convince them not to fight. And unlike the heroes, who had a little bit of disagreement, I guess you'd say, over who would be the leader, the villains have already decided before Doom even walks in the door that Doom's going to be the one to lead us. They said, Doom, we're hoping you survive. We've been waiting for you to show because we think you're the one to lead us, and we'll whip any uncooperative jerks into line because we're going to need to work together to win the Beyonder's prize. And Doom says, a prize? That's all you can think about? We have seen the power to end to begin universe, and all you dwell on is a lust for selfish desires. It's like there's more at stake than what we know. We must proceed cautiously, try to figure out, blah, blah, blah. Rather, because again, it's Doom and he thinks they're all beneath him. And of course, their heart's desires are going to be petty lusts of the flesh or money or basically pleasures. But I mean, he said whatever you want, Doom. So why, I mean, can't you just ask for my desire is to have the power of the Beyonder, you know? You grant me 3 wishes, I wish for more wishes. You know, maybe there's some kind of hidden agreement there where you can't wish for more wishes from Doom. Not really sure, but Doom's not really having it. He's like, all right, we need to not fight. And everybody else is like, no, we need to fight. You know, we need to get what we've always wanted. So Doom being Doom says, whatever. And he fires off his gauntlets from his hands and just drops all this machinery on the other villains and says, I'm walking away. I'll do it on my own. Forget these guys. And he gets in a rocket ship and starts flying off. And Kang sees him leaving and blows him out of the sky. So the heroes see this explosion and they see that a chunk of debris fell. And they decide to go and check it out. So Storm whips up some wind with her weather powers and comments on how everything about this battle world seems to be created in such a way to allow them to use their powers. Said, the air of this planet is, you know, easy to manipulate and helps me keep everyone aloft. No problem. And so the heroes find Doom, and Captain America being Captain America says, let me help you, Doom. And Doom says, I need the aid of no man, and basically fires on them. And before the heroes can even recover, the rest of the villains have showed up. Clearly, they survived Doom's attack or temper tantrum. And the page ends on that cliffhanger. Next issue, First Blood, the villains ready to attack and win the battle and get their heart's desire from the Beyonder. So not a whole lot of action in the first issue. It's a lot of setup. It's a lot of introduction of the characters and just kind of setting the stage for what's to come and the actual setting itself of this battle world. And the villains have found a headquarters. The heroes have not yet. So again, it's just kind of everybody getting a little bit of time in the spotlight, not as much as they will going forward. There's one thing I'll say about Secret Wars. It's that Shooter does a good job of juggling so many different characters. They all get a chance to shine in one aspect or another. But it moves pretty quickly. I mean, by the end of this first issue, the lines are kind of drawn. We know Magneto's off on his own. Doom's going to be off on his own. It's going to be the group of heroes which are not always functional. They are a little bit of a dysfunctional group. More so than the villains, you would think that the villains would be the more dysfunctional, but they're kind of united in their desire to defeat the heroes and have their heart's desires fulfilled. So I guess that kind of keeps them more close to the same goals. Whereas I don't know that the heroes necessarily have goals. I mean, they're at no point in the series do the heroes ever say, we need to defeat the villains so we can have our heart's desire. It's not their motivation. So I imagine that has to do a little bit with the dysfunction. But from issue 2 on, it's pretty much nonstop action. So I remember reading this first issue as a kid and being super excited to see so many characters all in one book. I used to love buying like team books. Like Avengers and Legion of Superheroes because I felt like I was getting more value for my money. Like the more heroes and superpowers I could see people using, the better in my mind. And so this was like right in my wheelhouse, and it was really cool. I really enjoyed it back in the day. The art by Mike Zeck is solid. I remember it being a little cleaner than going back and looking at it now. Going back and looking at it now, some of the panels look a little rushed or a little unfinished, particularly the panels that have a lot of characters in them, like those two panels that have the roll call. But again, that's kind of a little bit of a product of its time because they were working at a very small scale. And there was no working digitally back then where you could blow it up and then shrink it back down to the right size. So it's solid enough artwork, and certainly the panels where there's not, you know, tons of characters are done very, very well. But again, I think it's just so many characters on the page and, you know, working on a monthly book. In fact, Zeck might have been working on two books at this time. I'm not sure. I know there were some Marvel artists that were. And I know that he did a Punisher miniseries around this time, so that might be the case. But he doesn't skimp on the backgrounds and the alien technology and the alien fortresses and the alien ships and all that look really, really great. So I can't fault his artwork at all. I think as a kid, this was the first time I'd seen his artwork, and I remember enjoying it an awful lot. So great start to a series. I hadn't read it in quite a while, years actually, before I read it in anticipation of this podcast. And it definitely holds up, and it was super enjoyable to go back and read it. So what are your thoughts on issue one, Manny?
I was really, really impressed by it. Just by the way that Shooter is able to juggle so many characters. And like you said, give them each a little bit of time. And then what I was also impressed with, kind of like I was telling you earlier, is just the way he seems to be able to, he gets each of the characters. He understands their different personalities and is able to insert them in a way where they can express themselves in that specific way, specifically like Magneto and Dr. Doom, who aren't necessarily used to being team players. They're leaders. They're going to do what they want. And this whole idea of banding together to beat someone else, they're not really up for it. So especially Magneto, who got stuck with the heroes. So overall, just a really solid start. And it's one of the better number ones I've seen for an event book.
So be that it was mid-80s book, did you, and you know, obviously we read some lead ups to this, some good, some not so good. Were you just worried it was going to be like subpar?
Yeah, I'm not sure because everyone has always hyped this book up so much. You know, Marvel Comics themselves, they did that Secret Wars 2, and then you had told me, I mean, we're doing an entire series of podcasts just that revolves around it. So obviously, it has to have some sort of validity to why everybody talks about it so much. So it had a lot of for me to. It was really high on the pedestal. So it was just as good as everyone said it would be. I really enjoyed it.
So I actually just found a image of the cover that removes the Fantastic Four and the X-Men, as I said, and I'll put it in the show notes so you guys can see what I'm talking about. It's not a very good image because it's actually on a t-shirt, but I'll put it in there just so you can see what I'm talking about. Gives a good perspective. And obviously I'll put the cover for issue one there. I mean, you'll see it in the episode page anyway, but I'll put it right next to the new image so you can see a side-by-side comparison. So I guess that wraps it up for issue one. I think we'll have a lot more to say about subsequent issues because, as I said, there's a lot more action. This issue was a little bit light on action. And also we'll kind of refer back to issue one, though, as far as motivations go with Doom and Magneto and some of the dysfunction among the heroes as we get further into the story and we kind of see the seeds that shooter planted in this first issue. So, I mean, we could go on about the history of Secret Wars and some of the motivations and the things Mattel wanted and everything, but all that is in previous episodes of the Secret Wars chronology. So I encourage you to go back and listen to those episodes. And if you're joining us for the first time, you've been waiting for us to cover issue one. Just so you know, we got this complete Secret Wars chronology from the comicbookherald.com website. He has a Secret Wars chronology there, several different versions, a completely long version, I guess you'd say, like for the completist in you, like every single comic that has any reference to Secret Wars ever, basically. He has one that's just the main books that he thinks that you need to read in order to get the whole story. And then he has a streamlined one that's basically just the miniseries itself. So I encourage you to go over there and check it out if you want to follow along and know where we're headed. It's not just a chronology that covers this first Secret Wars event, but it's going to cover Secret Wars 2. It's going to cover Secret Wars 3, which I think was actually in the pages of Fantastic Four. Then it actually has some Avengers and Fantastic Four issues that Jonathan Hickman wrote, because it all leads into his Secret Wars event that just went down a few years ago and kind of brings us up to modern times. So it's a very comprehensive and a list reading order, and it covers a good 20 years of Marvel Comics, if not more. So I encourage you to go and check that out. Again, there'll be a link in the show notes for that as well. So anything else you want to add, Manny, before we sign off?
Nope, that's it.
All right, everybody, thanks for joining us. Please visit us at thecomicsourceblog.com for all past episodes of the podcast. Don't forget, we're going to be migrating all that content over to lrmonline.com very, very soon. We're still doing our exclusive podcast for LRM, the 9-panel grid. It comes out every Tuesday. We're going to have some news about the LRM 9-panel grid podcast coming up real soon. Just going to be a slight change, but for you listeners, don't worry. You're still going to be getting a podcast every Tuesday. So we'll have an announcement about that real soon. While you're at lrmonline.com, be sure and check out all their other content about pop culture, movies, TV shows, comic books, video games, all that kind of good stuff. So twitter.com/thecomicsource is where you can find us on Twitter. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to keep up to date when new episodes drop and our convention coverage. And I think our next convention Manny and I are going to be at is WonderCon in Anaheim, California, coming up the last weekend of March. And we're going to have a pretty cool giveaway. We haven't finalized the details yet, but stay tuned for that. You're going to have an opportunity to get something really cool that has the Comic Source logo on it, as well as the LRM logo, plus the chance to win something even bigger and better. So as I said, be sure to keep listening for the details on that. So thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.